True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Been in business approximately 25 years, actually since 96. So it depends on your count, how you count the years. It's maybe our 25th fiscal year in business is how they would say it. But as we count years from birth, it may be 24 years. But, you know, we've been around a while. I can't believe it. How long I've been in business and just what a ride it's been. You know, you go from being, I was in banking, and for those of you who don't know my background, I have a very strong background in kind of like technical sciences. I have kind of a interesting base because I started out like college in physical therapy and then moved into business and then into applied mathematics and statistics. I was an actuary when I got out of college, and then I did a bunch of postgraduate economic studies, and I've also, you know, had my share of real-world experience. I've been Series 6 and 7 licensed. I worked my way up to be a regional manager for Bank of America for a number of years, and before I opened this business, just before opening this business, I was hired by the one of the largest banks in the nation as a regional manager for a different division. But that was just a short stint before I did this. And I've been insurance licensed in every line in multiple states, and I've done general liability auditing when I was in the actuarial training program and so on and so forth. In the old school banking days, when I went into banking, I went into a company called Norwest Banks, which was the most profitable bank in the nation at the time, and big. They got up to like $400 billion when they bought out Wells Fargo. That was $160 billion. No one knew because they kept the Wells Fargo name. And then, of course, I, as a banker with B of A, I looked, you know, I was constantly analyzing people's finances. I was obviously very mathematical, so I was very involved in people's businesses. I had kind of an agreement with them. Anything we discussed that they wanted to be between them and I remained that way, as long as it didn't include anything that was, you know, defrauding the bank or something like that. And so I got a pretty strong personal relationship with a lot of clients. I dealt with upper-end clients at the time is who I really was in charge of. And I just got a lot of exposure to business and to you know, what works, what doesn't, people's finances. I've just learned a lot over the years. God kind of put me in the numbers and the money business. And then when I was a regional manager for Bank of America, I obviously was traveling a bit because I had to cover the branches in a three-state region for the most part, not all of it. But near the end, I did. I had Eastern Washington, Northern Idaho, and Northeast Oregon. And then near the end, when I left, they'd shut down a federal or a regional office that they put me in control of for a while in Seattle. I didn't want to do that. And so they increased my coverage area for a while. It was massive. It was like all of Oregon, all of Washington, and whatever. And so I was on the road constantly. I was listening to Christian radio constantly. And I started to, I came across certain speakers that made a lot of economic financial sense. And it was relatively, it was new to me because I'd been taught in the way. And I'd been taught to believe the system. Now, I'm not saying that on the inside I was always, you know, I always had that kind of that discernment and that healthy skepticism because you got, you know, the spirit kind of leading you there. But I tried to walk that, you know, compliant line, I guess you'd call it, the establishment line. I refer to myself sort of as the, you know, quintessential red, white, and blue American banker boy. You know, it was like I was athletic and all that. And, you know, I had everything going for me, beautiful family and everything. And then God just kind of dumped a lot of economic and financial truths on me. I started to, I picked things up a little bit quick, and I went all in with both feet, started just reading like crazy, went and saw a particular person on economic stuff. He'd written a couple books. He's since, well, I went and listened to all of his logic and his reasoning about the Federal Reserve, and I was like, this makes a ton of sense, because when you correlate it with all the information that I'd been fed in all my studies and my banking experience, it, you know, things, there were a lot of unchecked blanks. There was a lot of open-ended questions and things that just weren't, they didn't make sense, but you just go with it, you know, and that's this whole thought process of what we've got going on right now in this nation. I mean, folks, we are just falling in line under this socialist coup situation. And I have some stuff to touch on today. There's so many different topics I'd like to touch, of course. And I know I do that sometimes and meander a little bit. So, but, and then, you know, I've had a lot of experience in real estate and I do that. And then I've, you know, you name it, remodeling, construction, new construction. I've just kind of been around all that stuff. And then we built our facility. Well, I went into business in the 90s in this, and I was still in banking at the time. For the first few years, I had was in the coin business as well. And then eventually we shared a mutual space with a large jeweler here in town, Pounder's Jewelry, which is below us, which is in the old Moose Lodge. It's an old rundown building that has, you know, horrible heating and cooling beyond your wildest dreams. It was like we had the west end of the building and it was like 100, and it would literally get 100 degrees in the winter and in the summer and freezing in the winter. And it just was, you know, it was tough and we didn't have any room to go, stretch and so on. So I acquired the piece of property right above us and built our building from scratch, from the ground up. It's interesting because I have other projects going now, and I'm like, I look back and I did so much of the design. I designed the building. I spent a year trying to find a good architect. I worked with one guy who was really pretty green and, well, very simple, we'll say. And then I ended up working with another guy who was a client of ours, who I'd finally convinced. He took my design and amplified it drastically, put on way steeper roof lines and clock tower and added a bunch of fancy brick. And at first it was kind of overwhelming. The whole inside was not designed by him. I designed it myself. If you come into the building, you'll see when you walk in, there's probably a 25, the center of our facility is a 25 foot high ceiling that's covered. It's got box beam, you know, wood box beams. And then inside of that, we did a beautiful silver colored like tin roof, and we have a lot of nice wood trim, and it's just a lot of nice wood and not nice lights and a lot of rock, and it's just a very beautiful building on the inside, and we designed it specifically for this industry in mind. There's a lot of security protocols in this facility that you just wouldn't be aware of, for obvious reasons. But you know, we offer the depository service, which is the highest rated privately held depository service on the West Coast, as far as I know. I'd have to say Northwest, because I can't imagine in California there's not some pretty impressive stuff. I understand there was one in Vegas. I'm sure it's still there. It was a huge facility. Very brilliant idea. They put it in after I did mine, but it's a great place that they should have it. That in Palm Desert, Palm Springs, I think, has another really terrific major facility, you know. But we offer that service. Our building is extremely secure. I had the benefit that very few have of building it from the ground up. The only way, you know, I could have done anything comparable would be to have acquired an old bank building that was built properly, but then you have wiring issues and everything else. And not all bank built. In fact, most bank buildings are not built well. The old ones might have been, with the stone walls and stuff like that, but you still, like I said, you're going to be so technology depraved, and same with heating and cooling and all that. So we were able to handle that. We built this from the ground up. It's extremely secure. I could go through all the protocols and details. I will not. I can tell you that the building's extraordinarily secure, and it's a great place to do business. We designed the building and the facility and our business with your confidentiality and respect in mind. We want to offer the, you know, I like to refer to us as the Tiffany's or the, Tiffany's a little overkill. Let's call it the Nordstrom's of the coin business. If you've been to coin shops, what you have in your mind is nothing like we are. The only thing I will tell you is for serious collectors out there, we have a tremendous inventory that's not on display. 99% of our inventory is not on display. We just put a smattering of things out. We've been crazy busy the last few weeks, believe it or not, last couple months with COVID. Just, you know, we're a little short staffed still. I got one older gentleman out who's been with me for 2 decades, working part-time, and he's, you know, he's in a bracket where he's concerned about the COVID virus, so he hasn't come in, and then we've had some other people out with medical stuff, even though I think one of them, you know, is, who knows, probably collecting unemployment or something. I think he, you know, kind of had that in mind before. So we've got a shorter staff, but we also have a lot of activity with investment packages, and we're spending a lot of time cleaning up over, you know, we had one employee for about 10 years who was, you know, supposed to be in charge of a bunch of stuff, and there's just a lot of loose ends we're picking up and cleaning up and things like that. So I've been working long, hard hours. So some of you that call and I get messages and I don't get back, people get so frustrated, I know. And I like to talk with people. Obviously, there's a problem. But I like to get to know you when I call you. I don't always like to just be so clinical. I should definitely work on that, though. I used to be that way long ago in the banking days. And I remember, you know, just at one point, I think God just kind of told me, hey, you know, people are more important than anything else. Time management's awesome. We've got commodities that God gives us, health, time, money, that we have to deal with. There's other commodities, too, and I don't know how you fit them all together or prioritize. Obviously, there's family and those kinds of things. But it really is health, time, and money are the big three that we're, you know, bound to until we leave this place. And it seems like the magic trick is to have all three at the same time, health, time, money. And, you know, health can be broken into multiple levels. Of course, there's mental health and there's physical health and there's healthy environments and all that. Time is obvious. We all have the same amount of time. We have to honor and respect that. We are accountable for that more than we know. We got to watch for time thieves. People don't realize time is the most valuable commodity. Take it from me. I'm 53. Time flies, and I know there's people that are 65 and 75 that are like, wait till you get here, and I get it. Time flies. It goes away. You cannot get it back. We all get an equal amount of time. We all have a different set of talents, and it's really important when we get on this earth that we figure out what those talents are and not try to look at other people's talents and wish we had those. Jealousy is a terrible thing. A lot of times, bitterness in the Bible is referred to a number of times as bitter jealousy, or it'll combine bitterness and jealousy. I've seen that multiple times in the Bible. The two go hand in hand. It's interesting. The difference between envy and jealousy is that envy desires something that somebody else has. It's generally considered malicious or negative. And jealousy wants somebody else to not have something or an attribute or a relationship or whatever. It wants to destroy that other person. And secretly, I think jealousy always wants that to itself. So, you know, if somebody's, you know, not comfortable with certain aspects of their life or appearance or possession, whatever it is, and they see somebody else that's important to them looking at those other things or maybe cherishing another person or appreciating them, and there's insecurity, jealousy will come out. There's the only time jealousy in the Bible is spoken of as an acceptable behavior is when God's jealous. He is a jealous God. But guess what? He's God, and he's the big one, and we're not. And he, you know, when he sets up the rules and the guidelines, I mean, what are you going to do, right? He's God. So he has a right to be jealous when we worship other gods. I don't know why man goes after this stuff, people don't really think about the fact Baal worship and Islam are basically one and the same thing. You know, the Bible talked about the beast system that was, is not at the time of John in Revelation, and will come again. And you go back and you parallel the two, and you find that they worship the same God, that Muhammad, when he was looking for a God to empower him to, you know, retaliate and take revenge against Christians and Jews, he went to Mecca, found Allah, the moon god, and reincorporated all of these ritualistic activities and beliefs, for the most part, with Baal worship that had been destroyed by the Roman kingdom because it was punishable by death, because their religion demands a theocracy. Very important to understand. But I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but I want you to think about, we spent two decades almost being conditioned for what is going on right now by going through the 9/11 thing. We've been conditioned by seeing national tragedies, overblown, I'm not saying 9/11 wasn't a major thing, but overhyped, overblown, overstated by the media, dwelt on, kept negative. You know, I'm conservative in mind and soul, constitutionalist, but you know, I'll watch like Fox News, and they do the same thing. They constantly have to ask aggressive, negative, inflammatory, combative questions of guests by loading the question with a derogatory comment made by somebody else. And it is interesting that how they know, they seek to divide, to separate and to divide and pull us apart and put us into subcategories and different groups and special interest groups. And when you're seeking truth and justice and righteousness, and one of my hot buttons is injustice, that really gets me ticked off. When you're seeking that stuff, it does tick you off when you see things aren't going right. But it seems like those that are imposing their views on society repetitively, conveniently, consistently, all the time, which is the left-wing agenda, they never stop. They are just ruthless, and they get more angry. They get away with stuff that's terrible. They believe they're right. But, you know, when someone's lying or they're wrong, and we have at some level within us this base of knowledge, it says the laws of God are written on the hearts of man. We're created in God's image. We know right from wrong. But one thing I've learned over the years is when somebody has a problem lying or is a liar, the most common defense technique is anger and eruptive behavior. They lash out. They get mad. They yell. They freak out. And you've probably seen that. The truth is simple. If you're telling the truth, it's simple to understand. Another sign of someone being dishonest is confusion and chaos, and things aren't, you know, singular. They're not simple to understand. And if you feel like you're trying to find out information from somebody that should be real easy to understand, and they're skirting the issue and they're tossing you these short little sentences that are one-word answers that don't get you there, and you have to ask the same questions over and over, you're being lied to. If you go with your gut and you just learn to respond to that, you have to learn how to separate emotion from spirit, though. And a lot of people have a hard time with that. What's even worse is some people have squelched their spiritual side. And so they don't even know what that means. And that's, you know, simple enough. I mean, I became a Christian in college. You just, you know, the Bible's crystal clear. God created the universe. There's tons of evidence. The Bible's the most respected archaeological book on earth. I've been to Israel. It's unbelievable. But once you accept Christ, you realize you can't do it on your own. I mean, we've all had great accomplishments in life, some more than others. But it's still, we're nothing. We're peons. We're specks. I mean, we're specks that are loved by God and appreciated, but, you know, once we get that spiritual connection, we can learn to read and discern. And it's interesting, people that are not spiritual, they want an ideal that will never occur, okay? That's what this socialist thing is all about. If you really think about it, they have some crazy fantasy. Well, in fact, different groups have different fantasies. I mean, you know, frankly, law enforcement, part of the reason they get bitter, especially and arrogant, especially when you get into the upper levels like the FBI, you know, the highest authorities on earth for law enforcement that have conducted some major, major flawed investigations, you know, and when they have an ideal in their mind of what they want society to look like, and they're out trying to make that happen. Same with drugs and the DEA or anything. And it creates frustration because it's, you know, it's trying to impose an ideal, in this case, the law, which is technically an ideal. We create an ideal through the law, and then we get to impose that through, you know, law enforcement. Well, a lot of times when they don't see that happening, it's very frustrating to them. And they can tell you from the inside what would make things work better, and then there's people on the outside, and, you know, and then you run into this thing we've got going now, which is kind of a runaway train of socialism. I'm going to touch on that. If I have a little other time, I'll discuss a few other things. So, right now, we've got around the whole world, the response to, with a very few notable exceptions, the response to COVID-19, which is caused by the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus, has been to immediately abandon our freedoms and our free markets and institute a socialist police state ideal, which is basically, there's more to this. For some reason, we have all these people that are just chomping for socialism. They love power. I mean, I don't know if you've kept up with this, but Andrew Cuomo in New York, he's a lunatic. People go, I like that guy. He's a socialist. He's an egomaniac mobster who's implementing all kinds of crazy mandates and rules and regulations. And today, I was listening to some stuff and reading some stuff, and it's coming out now that he had this mandate that rest homes cannot refuse COVID virus patients, okay? So you have a demographic of people that are being affected by this, a very close relative in my life is a doctor working in the hospital, and they have worked in the COVID unit in a given hospital, and apparently those that are affected by it have an obvious set of pre-existing conditions and biological issues like extremely heavy, over 70, diabetes, a history of medical problems, other existing and recurring medical problems, etc. There are none that they've seen and that I've heard, for the most part, overall, it doesn't affect the average normal healthy person. I've touched on the fact that, you know, 2 weeks ago, they came out, you know, and of course the left fights all this, but they came out, even China, they discovered that at least 85% of the infected patients were asymptomatic, A meaning none or without, Latin, asymptomatic. Then last weekend, the Stanford study comes out They use a certain set of statistics. It's got a broad standard deviation on the final because the size of the sample population relative to Santa Clara County was the Santa Clara County is like 1.9 million. They sampled 3,330 people. That's a lot of people. And statistics is designed to use a set of parameters, and there's multivariable statistics. In this case, this is not a multivariable issue. It's just whether or not they test whether or not you have COVID, period. So there's not any real subjectivity. Missing variables shouldn't be in there, except for the selection process for the sample group. But in this case, they did some kind of a random Facebook thing. And I'll tell you, it was all signed up through Facebook. And statistically, it determined that because of the standard deviation, they found that a certain number of, you know, of the recipient or of the tested patient sample group, volunteers or whatever you want to call them, were infected, so that when you extrapolate from that and apply it to the overall community, it would say that we have 50 to 85 times the number of cases that we believe. So they're discovering this stuff's all over, okay? People are asymptomatic by the droves. Now, last fall, a lot of people got this real tough illness that wouldn't go away. It ended up leading to bronchitis, and, you know, a lot of people get nasal infections and they don't realize that's the number one way to stay sick, because that bacteria or virus harbors itself in there and it just keeps going back through. People don't understand that. One of the number one cures when you're sick is to keep your nose clean. They have like neti pots and all that. You can get to the point where you use like, small amounts of hydrogen peroxide in a neti pot with, or they have great big gentle syringes and stuff. You can put the squip salt in the water and you can add like mild amounts of hydrogen peroxide. Even the Native Americans have been using hydrogen peroxide for at least 500 years as an antibacterial. When they'd get cut or fall down, they'd keep things, you know, they'd have their own antiseptics, which is pretty interesting. But that kind of thing, I had a friend who battled with sinus infection his whole life, and he was able to eradicate that and ear infections with the hydrogen peroxide. You can use full strength over-the-counter hydrogen peroxide in your ears, up your nose. It's a burner, trust me. So, but a lot of people got sick last fall with this long, hard, dry hacking mess, and no one knew what it was. It wasn't testing as the flu, and it went on, and it affected certain people certain ways more than the others. And I have close friends and relatives that had it, and they don't know what it was. And now the rumor is, you know, we're saying, oh, it got released from a lab in November and all that. We don't even know, because in September, Bill Gates was having his event 201, educating all the educators about how terrible a coronavirus outbreak is and how we need to overreact. And then he did, of course, the pandemic docuseries with Obama. And Obama was even behind the whole study of this stuff under Bill Gates, because he funded the grant to the NIH in 2013. 2017, they shut it down. For some reason, after Obama was out, they said it was bad, you know. Anyway, so we got that whole series of events leading up. We don't know when it was really released, and I could go on from there, but I won't. What I want to take back off, in, out, up. Here we go. So the thing that's really concerning me, and I mean, obviously there's a lot of medical stuff too, but the economic and free market policies and impacts of this are unheard of. And I started talking about Andrew Cuomo first, And I'll bounce back on that real quick. I mean, he's kind of the egotistical microcosm of this thing. He has definitely been something. He is forbidden hospitals. He's forbidden rest homes from denying COVID patients. He's done incredible laws and regulation lockdowns for nursing homes. He said nursing homes must require PPE as well as temperature checks for staff. Isolate COVID residents in quarantine. Separate staff. Transfer COVID residents within a facility in a hospital to another long-term facility or to another non-certified location. So you get them out of the medical system. He's saying, get these people out of the hospital, put them in these rest homes. This is what's led to these high deaths back there. Also, it's hard to believe. It's kind of like, if you don't know, fear of the unknown and all that. But trust me, our numbers are statistical calculations and reporting on who's getting this stuff and who's dying is skewed and inaccurate. 10% of what they're reporting at most might be from it. You might say, oh, that's ridiculous. How could 9 out of 10 be wrong? Folks, they, as I've mentioned, the World Health Organization's diagnosis standards, 3 out of the 4 basic diagnosis standards are all subjective, like presumptive laboratory evidence. I love that one, presumptive at laboratory. Laboratory evidence means hard clinical fact. Presumptive means you're assuming something. Forward. I mean, come on. You can't assume hard clinical facts because they're not hard clinical facts. And he's gone on with this stuff with, you know, notifying all residents and their family members within 24 hours if any resident obviously tests positive for COVID or any COVID-related death, or if any resident is believed or assumed to have COVID or been exposed, and on down that list we go. So he's forcing these nursing homes to take these patients. They're starting to figure this out. He's been an absolute radical dictator. He's eating it up. He loves the limelight if you watch him. Some of you don't even know who I'm talking about. The governor of New York. That's a pretty big deal. New York is more populated than a lot of countries and well more populated and far wealthier with probably the biggest municipal gross municipal product, you know, volume of revenue, sales, whatever you want to call it, economic size in the world, the largest. And so he's kind of a jumping off point for the liberals. So we've got, that's why we're kind of keying off on him, because we're seeing what is going on there overall. And real quick, I got a list here of stuff that Cuomo, a list of laws and regulations that he had suspended. Of course, this article's liberal because it doesn't say the ones that he's imposed. All this education and child care. And by the way, with education, with all these kids staying home and working with parents, the competent, good parents are finding that their kids are doing far better. The incompetent, or not parents, or the incapable of teaching or whatever it is, are seeing the opposite. But that's a small percentage. The vast majority are getting better grades. The parents are figuring out these kids can learn in a couple hours a day. My son's teaching 4 kids at home, and they spend a couple hours a day, and they're doing great. So what's going on at school during the other 6 hours of the day? It's because they're pushing us. All this stuff over time is pushing us towards socialism, and a lot of this stuff's new. I mean, the idea of socialism's nothing new. It's just that it's named, it's visible, and it's something. It's been outlined in a way that anybody can pick it up and try to implement it. So, I mean, on a global basis, we got politicians. I've been extremely disappointed with Israel. It confirms a lot of anti-Israeli beliefs about the country. However, their population is, I mean, it's just, it's. I think it's like 6 million. You know, that's less than probably our top 10 cities in the U.S. They've been through a lot. They've been pressed through every blender you can imagine. They've got a lot to preserve. They've got a lot of enemies. Biological warfare is definitely one of them. But the worst thing is that politicians in Israel have been openly debating the possibilities of eliminating all personal freedoms, a full lockdown. We've got, most people don't even realize, in Rhode Island, we have police and National Guard troops have been going door to door searching for contraband visitors, especially New Yorkers, searching door to door. These are practices, folks. These are practice runs. The National Guard's doing this. The National Guard is here to protect us, not to govern and police us. They have no governing authority. They're subject to their state's governor. But we have constitutional rights that never go away. I mentioned recently where Trump said he had final authority and they went crazy. Today on TV, they're arguing. You've got Cuomo sending COVID patients, elderly COVID patients, to rest homes to spread it all around. And today, they're arguing that Trump was implying that people should drink or inject bleach. I mean, it's just the dumbest thing. He was just talking. He said, you know, I've heard different things I'd love to see come true. And he talked about the possibilities of infrared light inside the body to kill stuff off. Well, at this point, we can't. There's no way to administer that. So they mock him for that. And then he said there may be some kind of a, you know, he's not a doctor. And he said some kind of a disinfectant or something that kills bacteria that we could inject, he said. Maybe he meant ingest, but, you know, he was just being hypothetical. He's just trying to keep the hope out there. Trump's a big thinker. I'll tell you what. Everybody's like, oh, that's ridiculous. It shows how dumb he is. This poor guy, I mean, he may be a rock and of granite, but I'm telling you, the abuse is terrible. People don't understand smart people. Successful people do not see barriers in life. They don't see roadblocks. They just see challenges, opportunities. Some of the greatest accomplishments in history come from roadblocks. They say necessity is the mother of invention. And so we've got this specter of martial law around us, and we're tolerating it. Like I said, we had 20 years of being afraid of terrorists that you could see. We've grown numb to that. We've got that somewhat under control, fighting over the border and everything else. Now they've got the invisible enemy, and everybody's terrified. Too many bad sci-fi movies. You know, it's because this is, seems semi-apocalyptic, like something out of a bad sci-fi movie, with the arrival of some evil outer space virus. I'm not kidding you. I think Hollywood's had a huge impact on people's response to this stuff. We got the National Guard has been called out, think of this, in 28 states. Many state governors have issued edicts, you know, that force people to stay inside. Think about it. All these businesses that are deemed non-essential, they're closed. I mean, folks, the recovery on this, who knows? You get like Governor Jay Inslee. Freedom is the key. You can't do this. We can't do it. We've got to find an alternative. We had the president activate the Defense Protection Act, which was an act formed in the 1950s during the Korean War that empowers the executive branch, the president of the federal government, to take over pretty much of the economy as he wants or as he deems necessary to fight a crisis. Andrew Cuomo was telling him, criticizing him for not, quote, nationalizing the businesses. So what does Trump do? He mentions it on TV, on the media, and what, people freak out. I had people calling me going, did you hear Trump? He's talking about considering nationalizing this and that. Does he know what that means? Folks, Trump's no fool. I mean, he's not as dumb as you might think. He throws it out there for a reason. He wants to stir up the media and stir the pot because he's forcing people to think and pay attention more than they ever have. More people are engaged in news now than ever have been in watching it. And I'm telling you, the thing about it is you get the fake news, which is what a lot of this COVID stuff is too, driven by the CNNs and MSDNCs and, you know, crazy governor or crazy Congress people like AOCD. She's, you know, yesterday she was saying, or the day before, when the governors or the president was talking about going back to work, governors were saying they're going to loosen restrictions and put people back to work. AOCD, and by her name, her name's AOC. It's, you know, Andrea Ocasio-Cortez. Crazy. She's from the poorest district in the United States, supposedly, in the Bronx. So she talks like she's talking to poor, oppressed minorities, and she's giving them the worst advice you could ever give those people. She's saying only in America would a president be talking about being liberated and freed, meaning going back to work. In other words, she's saying freedom's not working. Freedom's kicking back like AOCD does. And just, you know, living on your family's trust fund, being a trust fund baby, which is what she is. So she says to these people, say no. When he says you can go back to work, say no, she says, to these poor, oppressed community groups. You know, and she just keeps professing socialism, welfare to an extreme. People hear this garbage. Kids hear this stuff, and they're not taught. Kids are getting raised in homes that are becoming more and more socialist. Their parents aren't taught. All their education comes from bad news. I mean, bad news stations or whatever, okay? So we got that. And then So around the world, with very few notable exceptions, the response to this COVID-19 stuff, the disease, which is, you know, SARS-CoV-2, has been to abandon freedom, free markets, and implement socialist police state activity. I mean, not only is it unethical and immoral, it is the greatest advancement against our system ever. And it will have long-term ramifications. They say we're never going back to normal. Everything, this is, you put it all together. Obama started this ball rolling how? Well, first of all, he's behind this. He's somehow involved with Bill Gates, who has the patent on all genetic sequencing of and any genetic or any clinical work on the coronavirus. And he happens to own Perbright, which is the company that provides the testing kits and all this other. I mean, he's right in the middle of it. He funded and paid for the Wuhan lab in 2017 when the coronavirus studies were shut down at University of North Carolina. Obama approved the grant for Bill Gates to get this patent and study it in University of North Carolina. Obama approved that grant. So he's involved somewhere. Why do I say that? Cloward and Piven strategy. Take over the nation through a health crisis. He want, you know, use health care. Why does Hillary and him, why do they want health care so much? You think, oh, you obviously give away free stuff and everybody votes. Controlling health, anything, especially these crises, gives you control over every single thing in a person's life. Look what we're doing. For your health, we're stripping away your civil rights. Where's the objection to this stuff? Mark Zuckerberg is censoring anybody who opposes this thing. And he's supported by the government. And this is happening, folks. It's Big Brother at its finest. Now they've got all these heat-sensing drones. I've seen video of police helicopters at night with infrared spotting young men, three of them on a rooftop, drinking a couple beers on the top of their roof, and the police come out at night and blow a blowhorn and say, put your hands up in the air. You know, you're breaking the social distancing law, and the building's surrounded by police, and you need to come down because they're sitting on top of their building having a beer, and apparently they're too close to each other or something. I mean, is this a problem? You tell me. I would say, yeah, that's a problem. So they're getting rid of our freedoms. They're abandoning any pretense of freedom in free markets, implementing socialist police states. This is, you know, part of the miseducation has prepared us for this. And the media, I've always said, the media and academic worlds is what's turning this world around, which is exactly what the communists said that we should do, Karl Marx and everything. So we're sitting in a situation now where we're literally making a mockery out of our Constitution and Declaration of Independence. It's a mob tactic. It's a control tactic. It's a dictator, tyrannical, dictatorial tactic, and all these people in power. I mean, we had a guy, a congressman on the news the other night, with Tucker Carlson, asked him, what right do you have to throw out the Bill of Rights when implementing these draconian measures, basically, on your people? The congressman's response, he laughed, like, this is really funny. He laughed and said, Tucker, that Bill of Rights stuff is over my pay grade or whatever. What? You're a governor for the state and you don't care about or know what the Constitution says? Didn't you take an oath to uphold that at some point? And it wouldn't matter if you did or didn't, because it's the law of the land. It's the basis of who we are. So this is where we're going, and this is it's actually very threatening. Okay, so the moves to a socialist police state are, you know, it's like when you watch the liberals over time, they make progress. They yell about abortion all the time, homosexuality, this, you know, all special rights, special handouts, special. What do? Never let a good crisis go to waste. Rahm Emanuel said it when he was the chief of staff under Obama. Media did nothing with it. This is a good crisis. They're not letting it go to waste. They're moving us to a socialist police state. This may not be the final nail in the coffin, but it's sure a good dry run. And you got Obama promising, Obama and Gates promising these one-size-fits-all injections with nanoparticles that you can be tracked. And he says you can prevent people from buying and selling if they don't have that. That sound familiar? I think I've discussed that. We are not probably... The thing is, moving us to a socialist police state is not going to produce a cure for COVID-19. There's some great articles on this in the New American magazine that I'm keying off of. Which is put out by the John Birch Society. I've talked about that. They're a good constitutional organization. They have terrific writers, and I would definitely recommend supporting the organization, especially if you can see the history and impact they've had on this nation. They've done amazing things to protect and help us, so I'm keying off of that information. So as they're not, you know, socialism produces nothing good. So you don't get your cures out of broken down socialist countries. When's the last Nobel Peace Prize that came out of a country like Venezuela under tyrannical dictatorship or dictatorship. Not none that I know of, right? So if socialism doesn't solve problems, it creates them. These people are wanting to still, they want to destroy our economy. That's huge. They think it's going to get Trump out. Or they want to change or destroy civilization as a whole. Or they're just ignorant. They don't even know. Maybe they're just brainwashed and they're just doing what they're told. Or maybe there's a major spiritual component there. I think that's probably the more likely answer. So the entire span of history, especially the last 100 plus years since socialism has been implemented, it has proven to us that progress, art, architecture, technology, advances in science, declines in poverty, and growing abundance that the U.S. enjoyed up until 9/11 and still does, and even the cure for diseases have always been the phenomena of free, or of the free and undirected activity of individuals in the market, an unencumbered free market. That's when things happen. Think about this. When you have socialism, you lose all your daily rights. You lose your necessities, your commodities, food, you know, shelter. If you have to, if all your daily necessities become a scarce commodity, why would you develop anything? I mean, why, you know, you're busy trying to not starve and feed yourself. That's what socialism does. It's the devil's way of shutting down God's given, you know, talents to us, our creativity, our ability to produce and create. Don't be fooled. This world's amazing. God's given us the best of the best. We need to enjoy it and capitalize on it. There's endless experiences, and you have endless talents. You just got to tap into them and do things that that God gave you talent to do. And obey his word, and, you know, do unto others as you want them to do unto you. And, you know, just to be good and kind and treat people right, etc. Right? So by contrast, wherever massive government interventions have been tried, they have always ended in poverty, scarcity, and mass genocide, mass death, starvation. This is what we've learned in the last 100 years. But why would we ever want to educate our kids about this, you know? I don't know, you know, the lefties love, the media is left, you know, the leadership's left, the government's filled with this trash, and it has been. I don't know why, but it seems people just don't know. You know, conservatism a lot of times is about personal accountability and responsibility. And we are constantly being deceived. So, while in trying to cure the COVID-19 with authoritative socialism, now remember, our leaders have the money to be doing what they're doing. They don't. They're borrowing it like crazy from the Fed. But the reason our resources as America are even there is because of our free market. What they're shutting down is the generator and catalyst of what that gives them the ability to think they can shut down and ignore the Constitution. Arrogance. Power and money. So wherever massive government interventions have been tried, they always end in poverty, scarcity, and, you know, heinous, you know, Stalin and Lenin and Mussolini and Hitler and, you know, even back to Napoleon. So in trying to cure COVID-19 with authoritarian socialism, our policymakers and politicians and those like them all around the world are putting in place a course of treatment that literally will kill the patient. The disease, well, may eventually be eradicated or controlled. But what's the point if our civilization is destroyed? And I think they've lost touch with that. It's without question important that it's important we want to stop the pandemic. But if we want to stop the pandemic, if you want to call it that, it's not, but we'll go along with that. Then the next answer is more freedom and more of the prosperity that results from freedom. Using police state tactics to rock, destroy, shut down our economy, and control people's freedom of movement, which is basically your expression of your First Amendment right, and Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it creates a plethora of dangerous conditions, putting people's lives at risk. Socialism, all this stuff, it creates poverty. This is what socialism looks like. It creates depression, drug and alcohol abuse, suicides go through the roof, and it goes on from there. It's endless. It's crazy. So as I'm getting down towards the end here, if socialist economies promote like an advanced, innovative, creative solutions and good positive economic outcomes, including things like curing disease, we should see evidence of this from past experiments in socialist countries. It's been tried before several times, and guess what? It always comes up wanting. It comes up failed. Socialist command economies don't work. We'll leave it at that. I'm out of time. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Appreciate it. Love your loyalty. Hang in there. Stay strong. Be wise. Give us a call if we can help you out. We'd love to help you build a portfolio and protect yourself as we head towards an economic tsunami. This is going to be a big, big, crazy, ugly thing. Three individual positive reviews on Google and whatever, and we get $2 silver. Take care. God bless. Have a beautiful weekend. Love you. Bye.